Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to get an update from the Minnesota National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing and hear how one veteran is helping others transition into the civilian job market. My co-host today is Jason Burley. And first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Traditional Guard members drill primarily one weekend a month. That means nearly all of our soldiers and airmen have other careers and other responsibilities outside of their military service. Two of the most prominent responsibilities are family and employment. The Minnesota National Guard recognizes this challenge of balancing responsibilities and provides resources to assist. Our family programs teams work tirelessly to support our military families. They offer military youth programs, transition assistance for members preparing to leave the military, and a connection to other valuable resources. Our employer Support Guard and Reserve Program, known as ESGR, ensures that employers understand exactly what it means to employ a Guard member. The ESGR program also recognizes the standout companies in our community who provide exceptional support to our Guard members, be it at home, at the office, or in uniform. We all do a better job and feel better about it if we've got the right support. Here in Minnesota, we've got the right support.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the opening, we're going to check in today with the Minnesota National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing, and joining us now is Colonel Nate Asta, who is the Operations Group Commander at the Duluth-based 148th Fighter Wing. He's responsible for organizing, training, and equipping the needs of 81 officer and enlisted members in the organizational support and fighter squadrons within the Operations Group. And Colonel Asta, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thanks, Tom, for having me.
Colonel, I want to check into your career a little bit. I think you started out on active duty. How long have you been a member of the military?
Well, I went to the Air Force Academy starting in 1995. Went there for 4 years, so 1999, and that's where I got my commission as a second lieutenant in 1999. So then from there, I did about 11 years of active duty service before I joined the Minnesota's 148th Fighter Wing.
And, sir, somewhere along the line, I understand you got a lot of time, a lot of flying hours on the F-16.
Yes, that's been the aircraft that I've flown my entire career. So after I was commissioned in 1999, I went right away to UPT, or undergraduate pilot training, in Mississippi for about a year. So that put me right around the year 2000, where I got an F-16. I started training in the F-16 and been flying it ever since. So 21 years now.
And, sir, somewhere in those 21 years, I understand you've flown over 70 combat sorties, totaling more than 350 combat hours. Can you tell us where all of that happened?
Sure. Yeah, one assignment on active duty. When I was a brand-new first lieutenant, we were doing an operation called Operation Southern Watch, where we were enforcing the no-fly zone in the skies over Iraq. So we had deployed to Saudi Arabia and went there for 3 months and went north and patrolled the no-fly zone. And then when I joined the 148th back in 2012, we supported Operation Enduring Freedom out of Kandahar, Afghanistan, where we went and flew for a little over 3 months there supporting operations and our folks on the ground in Afghanistan. And then in 2018, I was fortunate enough to be the commander of the 179th Fighter Squadron, and take the squadron overseas to the Middle East, where we ended up flying combat operations primarily against ISIS into northern Iraq and Syria. So we were up there patrolling and supporting our folks on the ground for a little over 3 months there. Not all have been combat. We have done some Operation Noble Eagle in 2020, down in the southeastern portion of the United States, where we were activated and we flew Operation Noble Eagle sorties. So that's kind of my operational career in a nutshell.
Very good, sir. We're talking with Colonel Nate Asta from the Minnesota National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing on Minnesota Military Radio. And, sir, I wonder for our listeners that might not know, can you explain the 148th Fighter Wing? It's part of the Minnesota National Guard. A little bit about your capabilities and your aircraft?
Sure. So we are the 148th Fighter Wing. It's a flying unit up in Duluth, based out of the Duluth Airport. We have a little over 1,000 wing members, Air National Guard members, where we fly the F-16 Block 50s, which is the newest F-16 in the United States Air Force inventory. So our primary mission that we do is a SEED mission. That's S-E-A-D. It stands for Suppression of Enemy Air Defenses. So our job is to go in and try to clear out the enemy air defenses to allow other aircraft to come in unimpeded. So that's primarily what we train to do day in and day out. So we fly 4 to 5 times a week, 2 times a day, once in the morning typically and once in the afternoon. And we typically send up about 8 jets at a time, and we train to our varying mission sets that we have. We have airspaces all throughout the northern portion of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the UP.
Sir, does some of that involve anything about the border with the United States and Canada?
You know, not operationally. Our training area ends about 20 miles south of the border, but we do not do any sort of operations, real-world operations. Our mission up here primarily is just training.
And, sir, as we indicated, you are the operations group commander within the wing. Can you explain to us the operations group?
Sure. So the wing structure is we have our base commander, otherwise known as the fighter wing commander, and then under the fighter wing commander, we have 4 groups, and I am one of the group commanders in charge of operations. So anything that is dealing with flying, so the pilots, our intelligence, our life support people that take care of all of our flying gear and our helmets, we have airfield management people that take care of the airfield that we operate off of, and then the folks that track all of our currencies, that all lives within the organization that I command. That is known as the operations group.
So, sir, does that include some of the Minnesota National Guard firefighters up on the base there?
They are actually in a different group. They're under the mission support group of the 148th Fighter Wing. So everybody that is kind of supporting the operation, like our firefighters, our cops, our civil engineers, they fall underneath the mission support group.
And in one follow-up question, sir, you said that you've deployed a couple of times with the wing on missions. When you do that, do you bring your own maintenance people with you?
We do. We go as an aviation package. So we take a number of jets with us wherever we are tasked. So we'll take all the pilots that we need, all our intelligence people, our airfield managers, and then we have a significantly large maintenance package that takes care of those aircraft and keeps them running, which is one of the best things of the Air National Guard is typically we have some of the best maintenance in the entire Air Force. These people spend an entire career working on these same aircraft day in and day out, and they know these aircraft better than anybody. So I think that is such a huge plug for our Air National Guard maintenance folks.
Now, Colonel, you mentioned that we've got the newest F-16s, the Block 50s. Now, I understand the 148th Fighter Wing is an award-winning outfit. Over the last few years, you've won some national awards within the entire Air Force.
That is correct, Tom. Most recently, I went out to a national conference, and I was lucky enough to receive award of being the best fighter squadron in the entire Air National Guard, which was quite an honor to get up there and accept that on behalf of the men and women of the 148th Fighter Wing.
And, sir, I know you're based out of Duluth, but do your F-16s make good use of our Camp Ripley up in the middle of the state?
You know, we don't do too much work up at Camp Ripley. Most of our training areas are along, like I mentioned earlier, in northern Minnesota, Wisconsin, in the UP. Occasionally, we will go down to Camp Ripley and do some approaches or do some flying, instrument flying in that pattern. But that is not one of our major training areas.
And, Colonel, I know there's an exercise coming up. I think it's called Northern Lightning. Can you just briefly tell us what that's about?
Sure. Northern Lightning is an exercise. It's an Air National Guard-run exercise that is held out of the Volk Field Combat Readiness Training Center right near Toma, Wisconsin. It is actually a fairly large total joint force exercise. One of their objectives for that exercise is to be a highly tailorable, cost-effective exercise that units can put in their objectives, what they want to accomplish, and then they'll set up the exercise to meet those objectives. They primarily focus on fourth and fifth generation fighter aircraft from across the joint force. And when I mean fourth and fifth generation aircraft, your fourth-generation aircraft are your F-16s, your F-15s, your fifth-generation aircraft are more your F-35s and your F-22s. So this exercise works for both fourth and fifth-generation to work together to accomplish a very difficult task. And so we work together, we fly together, and then we debrief together and figure out what we did good as a joint force or what we did not do good and how we can do better next time. And the exercise is about a two-week exercise, and that'll be coming up here in August. So we're really, really excited to be participating in the Northern Lightning.
Very good, sir. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to speak more with Colonel Nate Asta about the Northern Lightning exercise that's coming up. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Today we've been getting an update from the Minnesota National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing, and we're speaking to Colonel Nate Asta, who is the Operations Group Commander at the Duluth-based 148th Fighter Wing. And Colonel, my co-host today in the studio here is Jason Burley. And Jason, a few years back, retired from the Minnesota Army National Guard, and he's got a question for you.
Well, thanks, Tom. And yes, sir, we were thinking as you were speaking to us about your joint training capabilities. Many years ago, we used to do training exercises with the 148th Air Wing in the Gemmel training area. How do you integrate with Minnesota Army National Guard today?
So how we integrate is typically if we're doing a close air support mission, we will work with our liaisons that are with the Army National Guard or Army units. And we will help support them based on their scheme of maneuvers and how they're operating. We will support their operation from above, providing close air support.
Do you continue to have a fairly close working relationship with the Minnesota Army National Guard, or are those two entities fairly independent?
We do when they ask. Absolutely. So we want to provide our home state, our guardsmen, the support that they need. So absolutely. That we will support them when called upon.
Thank you, sir. Now, as we started talking at the end of the first segment, the 148th Fighter Wing will participate in a two-week joint training exercise with approximately 25 units from the Army, Navy, Air Force, and National Guard at Volk Field Training Center in Wisconsin. This is an annual nation-level exercise led by the Air National Guard and provides tactical-level combat training focuses on complex scenarios. And, sir, you told us that's referred to as Northern Lightning over at Volk Field in Wisconsin. Sounds like that's 25 units from the Army, Navy, Air Force, and National Guard. You must have a lot of folks over there.
We do, and we try to support this exercise every year because it is essentially in our backyard. What's great about this exercise is we can support it with such a small footprint, meaning that we can send down half of our jets down to Volk Field and they can operate off of the field there. And we can support the other half from up here. And it's a quick, close flight for us to support that. So, I mean, there is a lot of aircraft that come to this exercise in central Wisconsin from Marine Corps and F-35s to Air Force F-35s and F-22s. We have Navy F-18s. Air National Guard F-16s, and then we also get some folks that are simulating the bad guys. So we get some trainer aircraft, T-38s. We contract out an organization that provides A-4s to supply the bad guy or the Op-4. We have refueling tankers that are airborne to refuel our aircraft. And then we also bring in folks on the ground to help control. They utilize their radar to see the air picture, and they provide us tactical control over the radar. And radio, and it's just a great exercise all in all. So we provide some of the Op-4 or the Red Air from home station, so we'll fly four jets out of Duluth. We'll fly about the 150 miles south. We'll refuel off of KC-135, and then we'll provide the Red Air. The other half of our organization will be on the field at Volk Field, and what's important about that is there's a lot of synergy and a lot of learning that goes on in the mission planning and the integration with all these other units in the mission planning and then the execution. And then the big learning happens in the debrief where they come back and go, did we do things right or did we do things wrong? And everything is instrumented down at Volk Field so they can watch it from a God's eye view of how the engagements went and what they did according to plan or did not do according to plan and what to do better next time. You know, we go to war as a joint force, and that's how we're training, and that's what's so great about this Northern Lightning exercise.
Colonel, you said in the first segment that twice a day you send your F-16s up for some training out of Duluth, but that's just the F-16s from the 148th Fighter Wing. Your pilots must really look forward to this annual exercise when they can interact with the Army, Navy, Air Force, and work on communications and work on joining forces to go after the enemy.
Absolutely. And I akin this to a sporting event like football. You know, you do your block and tackling. That's what we do every day training. We do our basics. And then we put it together, and we do it in a small exercise like Northern Lightning, where we're integrating with the rest of the team, and that is how we're practicing all our basic skill sets and how we're contributing to the team. So that's what Northern Lightning is, and the pilot corps here is super excited to participate this year.
And, sir, I would guess that you mentioned refuelers, so that probably involves the Wisconsin National Guard, Air National Guard, with their refuelers and some very good training for them as well.
Absolutely. They take off out of Milwaukee, a short flight for them, and they're airborne refueling many different types of aircraft.
So we are talking with Colonel Nate Aista from the 148th Fighter Wing on Minnesota Military Radio. And, sir, as part of this exercise, Northern Lightning, what part does the 148th, what role does the 148th play? Are you a lead unit? Are you the command unit? How does this come together?
Well, when we plan this exercise, we allocate every unit so many mission commanders. And those mission commanders are in charge of that day's air war. They're in charge of the planning. They're in charge of the execution, and they're in charge of the debrief of it. And typically we get 3 to 4 of those mission commanders over the course of a two-week exercise. We are a fourth-generation F-16, but we are training with our fifth-gen F-35s and F-22s. So we are really working on our training back and forth between our two platforms, or our two aircraft or three aircraft, on how to best solve the problem that's given to us.
So, Colonel, would that give you the opportunity to figure out which aircraft, fourth or fifth generation, are best at certain things and which other aircraft might be better used in other situations?
Absolutely. You know, not every aircraft is the best at everything. Everybody has got its niche. So we try to exploit our strengths and mitigate our weaknesses. And so that's what we try to work together as a joint team between our different types of aircraft platforms.
Sir, that sounds like an exciting exercise. The best of luck to you and the 148th. Another question, you mentioned the airspace that's managed by the 148th Fighter Wing. Can you tell us how that's utilized and why that's important?
Yes, so we have quite a bit of airspace up here to the northern portion of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and it's some of the best, if not the best, in the country. We don't have too much airline traffic that flows through this area, which allows us a good amount of space to train. You know, as countries advance in their aircraft and their weapon systems, so does our airspace to help meet our training that is required for this advancement. So we have great airspace up here over Lake Superior and over the land, and we utilize it daily.
Sir, it sounds like you're constantly training, and this Northern Lightning exercise gives you some really advanced training. And all that means that when a mission comes up and you're called to deploy, your pilots and your crew and your maintenance folks are ready.
That is absolutely correct.
Sir, for our listeners today, they're going to hear you all over Minnesota. If any of those were interested in a career in the Minnesota Air National Guard, what would you have to tell them?
I would absolutely say join us. Join the Air National Guard, join the Army National Guard. You know, we see these kids coming out of high school. We can train them. We can give them a great skill set. We can give them tuition for college if they like. And we provide them an opportunity to give service back to their country, which I feel sometimes we forget about. There's a service greater than people's self, and that's a service to their nation. So, the careers that we have in our Air and Army National Guard is broad, and you can find a job that you like. We have it.
Colonel, I'd like to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate the time.
That was Colonel Nate Asta from the Minnesota National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing. This is Minnesota Military Radio. When we return, we're going to hear from one veteran that's helping others transition into the civilian job market. Please stay with us. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to have a special guest on, and we're going to talk about military-civilian transition in the post-pandemic era. My co-host today is Jason Burley, but before we get to that, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Minnesota has a unique team of organizations who collaborate together to find and house homeless veterans. A key tool for these organizations is the Minnesota Homeless Veteran Registry, which helps these organizations to assist veterans who are experiencing homelessness and need access to stable housing. Participation is voluntary for veterans, and anyone can refer a veteran to join. For more information and to access referral forms, please visit Minnesota Homeless Veterans Registry page at MinnesotaVeteran.org. Ending veterans homelessness is a focus for Governor Walz and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I am proud of the progress the team has made, but I won't be satisfied till we're able to declare the end of veteran homelessness statewide. Anyone who knows a homeless veteran can call 1-888-LINK-VET. That's 1-888-LINK-VET.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said, my co-host today is Jason Burley. And Jason, a few years back, you transitioned out of the Minnesota Army National Guard, but you were a weekend guardsman person. And
right.
You had full-time employment. And so when your guard career was over, you didn't have to transition too hard other than stop shaving and grow some hair and some of those things. But we have on a guest today that's going to talk about how to transition from military service full-time into civilian, and that's a little tougher than it sounds.
Yeah, it absolutely is, and I mean, very interested to get to the subject. You know, I did transition off of active duty from my active duty time and then took employment, which is completely different than retiring and taking on and transitioning or just leaving. So it's a topic that we'll get to, and I'm really excited to have joining us now Aaron Myers, the General Manager of Transcend Employee Engagement. You know, Aaron and I have served together for many years in the past. Aaron comes to us with a degree from the American Military University in business and management. He's got an MBA from Texas A&M. He's a retired first sergeant with over 20 years of service in active duty and in the Minnesota Army National Guard. And again, is currently the general manager of Transcend Employee Engagement. Welcome to this program.
Jason, Tom, thank you so much for having me.
So let's just get started with your background, your military background, you know, your experience, what you've done, how did you get there, you know, the elevator speech of a 20-year career.
Oh, boy, the elevator speech. Well, I started off in Air Defense Artillery with Jason here as my first platoon leader, and we go way, way back. And then one day I was actually asked to become a recruiter by one of my friends who practically got me in the military. So I started recruiting in the summer of 2001. And where it got really serious was when I had two young men that were about ready to enlist. They went down to a hotel on September the 10th, and then the next day they were supposed to swear in, raise their right hands, and enlist. But then the towers fell, as we all know. So these young men actually came at me once we were evacuating the building, and they said, what do we do now? And that was a very pivotal moment in my career because it really helped me to appreciate what leadership was and where I wanted to be in my life, how I wanted to help other people. So from there, I still recruited. I volunteered to deploy to Iraq in 2009, 2010 with the division, the 34th Infantry Division. And then when I came home, I became a recruiting leader and a first sergeant for a training company until my very, very end when I was all set to continue my career. But I was hit by a semi-truck at about 45 miles an hour and fused my neck and pretty much put me on a fast track to retirement. So here I am today.
Well, it was a pleasure serving with you. I know you had a lot of accolades over your period of service. But you do find yourself in a place today where you were a transitioning service member. What was that experience like? What did you face? And how did you end up with Transcend today?
Okay. Yeah, it was not an easy transition, as you and Tom were talking about earlier. I mean, I thought I was ready, and I was kind of thrust into a position because of the accident I was in. But here I am. I have an MBA. I have all this leadership experience, military experience, and right in the middle of COVID, I'm trying to find gainful occupation. And it was quite challenging. But after a couple of months, I stuck to my basics. I remembered where I came from. And I reached out to people that could help me. And I truly believe that is how I found myself today as the general manager of Transcend Engagement. It's the company I work for right now, where we have technology and human services for companies all across America. And we work with communications, performance management. We work with recognition programs, and then also any kind of leadership training that you might need.
When you found yourself in that transition and you were looking for employment, what were the key activities that you took to help in that transition and eventually help you find employment?
Yeah, well, it was something that the one part I don't tell people these days about my employment search is that I must have submitted a couple hundred resumes, a couple hundred applications. So during the first 2 months when things weren't working, I reached out to those people that could help me. And Jason's really humble, but he was one of the first people I actually reached out to. And you helped me, sir, get on the path that I'm on today, which then led me to other people like Jesse Johnson. It helped me to the Eagle Group. I worked with people like Randall Casberg and David Hopkins, Alan Hill, Marilyn Williams, Nicole Precop. I mean, you name it. I have a bunch of names, and if I missed you, I apologize. But these people all got me where I needed to go because they said, look, you're a veteran. You have skills. You're just not telling your story as well as you possibly could be telling it. So that's what got me on that path to saying, okay, I need to be able to quantify and qualify what it means to be an Army leader so that the civilian leaders can understand this a little bit better.
It's a difficult thing to do, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, those of us that have served, we recognize the acronyms. Even on this show, we say no acronyms, right? We we talk about that because it's difficult. But that it's bigger than that even. How do you define or explain your military service to a civilian employer and make that translation?
Okay, yeah, this is going to sound like I'm not trying to run around the question here, but it's the one thing I always do is I remember my people. I remember the people that I led, the people I served with, and I look at where they're at today. I was able to work with the best recruiter in the world, in my opinion, Michael Belo. I had incredible station commanders, Jesse Howard, Nick Ferris, Dustin Morrow, Nate Ross, Kyle Klopaki, you name it. I mean, these guys, these men and women that I led with, that I served with, became who I wanted them to be and exemplified all the qualities and traits of what an American soldier is. And when I looked at that, I saw myself being able to explain leadership positions, like how do I get people from point A to point B? How am I able to transition to people that are having difficulties? And just looking at those people and the differences that we made in their lives, that's where it all started.
We're speaking with Aaron Meyer, the general manager for Transcend Employee Engagement here on Minnesota Military Radio. Aaron, one of those things that you were just kind of alluding to is really your network. Mm-hmm. How do you expand your network, build your network, reconnect with a network? It seems, you know, incredibly important as you're transitioning.
It is. And I would say LinkedIn, LinkedIn, LinkedIn all day long. That's the first thing everybody should have when they're transitioning. Actually, that's how I got a hold of you, Jason, was through LinkedIn. But it's just like anything else. You have to have balance. You have to have yourself in many different positions. You have to make the calls. Go seek out groups like the Eagle Group. Talk to other veterans that are serving. Talk to people that just recently went through the process. But you have to have it balanced, and you can't put all your eggs in one basket. That would be the best advice I could give somebody.
So how did you expand that network, though? I mean, so you've got a 20-year military career, but you're obviously pursuing educational pursuits during that time. Did you specifically attempt to broaden your network while you were serving, or how did you get such an expansive network?
I actually did. I tried to broaden it, not just from within, but also all across the country. It actually landed me a contract with Transcend Engagement with the Idaho Army National Guard, who's using our services now, just because I was reaching near and far. But the people that really helped me out to help me expand it were those former leaders I had, like General Lloyd Ault. I mean, the president of MACV, he's got plenty of other things to do with his time, right? He's a very busy man. But I asked him one day to write me a recommendation letter because I served with him. And without hesitation, he did it for me. And not only did he do that, but other people that I seek out to do that with helped me that along that way and gave me some advice and some other connecting people that could help me to get where I needed to be.
We have a expansive network in the Minnesota National Guard. We've got great opportunities to continue to connect, and we have a responsibility to connect our networks but with our past service. We'll talk more about that when we come back. We need to take a short break. I'm speaking with Aaron Myers, the General Manager of Transcend Employee Engagement. This is the Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your guest host, Jason Burley, along with Tom Lyons. And today we're talking with Aaron Myers, General Manager of Transcend Employee Engagement. Aaron, welcome back to our next segment. We just left off on talking about the expansion of networks. And how did your network lead you to where you are today? How did you get to Transcend Employee Engagement?
Well, I don't know how it got me to Transcend. I just know that it did. And that's because I had a lot of irons in the fire. But I found Bob Randall. He's the president and CEO of Transcend Engagement. He's a PhD in organizational leadership. And he didn't even know really what a first sergeant was when I sat down and talked with him. But you could just see that he was completely engaged into the qualities that a soldier brings, as I was describing them earlier with the quantifying and qualifying of how we do our business. So when I sat down with him, I figured this is an occupation I really want to do. And I ended up writing him a 22-page paper after our first interview just to show him how serious I was. And he took that, did a second interview, but the second interview was a walk through the plant. After that, he said, we're hired. So, and then I took the job.
Aaron, I'm listening to your story here, and it seems to me that you went on a kind of a long pandemic journey to figure out what you were going to transition into from the military to civilian employment. And at some point, it seems like the light went on and you decided, I want to help other veterans go through this journey and do it quicker and better. When did that happen?
It happened after I got the job, and then I started looking at more veterans who were trying to do the same thing I was doing. And I was doing kind of a self-after-action review, saying, what did I do well? What could I have done better? And I saw all these people out there that could use this kind of help, personalized help, the help that I wish I would have sought out a month or two prior to me getting into the process. So I got together with Alan Hill from UHG, who is a huge veteran supporter, Marilyn Williams and Nicole Precop, and we're starting this group where we're going to have personalized sit-downs, not only with veterans, but also with business leaders, so that they can help understand what veterans bring to the table.
How are you conducting outreach? I mean, how are you letting people know that this exists? I mean, this hopefully will help you, but are there other ways that you're conducting outreach?
Oh, Jason, I'm a recruiter for life, my friend. Recruiter for life. I've always considered myself to be freedom's megaphone when I was recruiting, and I'm doing the same thing right now. Any vessel I have, any point of contact I can use, I am just singing the message of let's get our veterans more help and more support. So there really isn't one way I'm doing it, but I'm using everything that's at my disposal.
So tell me a little bit more about Transcend and what you're doing there, what activities relate to this mission and how you're accomplishing that.
Well, when I joined Transcend, I wanted to join an operation where I could work directly with people. And this is almost the perfect fit for me. We go and we ask companies if they need assistance engaging with their workforce. I mean, with today's environment, you have the war on talent, which is going to only get more difficult as skilled labor demand increases, but the supply is in short staff. So, I mean, we are helping these companies to give them an advantage over others by looking at their retention rates, helping them out with surveys that actually provide ROI, and then giving them communication and technology that's fit for the hybrid workplace, for today's modern environment.
So at Transcend, I mean, we're looking for ways to help military service members transition. Opportunity at Transcend for our fellow service members to come to work?
Absolutely. We are 100% veteran friendly. So come on over. We have a couple of job positions open right now with our sister company, Black Forest, and we would welcome anything and anybody who's interested in our organization. I just think it's a perfect kind of an occupation and an industry, being within the engagement industry, for a veteran to get into, because you are essentially helping other people to lead others effectively, and nobody knows that better than a veteran.
When you think about the future and watching more and more young people come into military service, not everybody is going to transition either as a retiree or off of active duty, or What messages do you want them to hear about their service time and then preparation for when they move on to the next phase of life?
That's a great question, Jason. The first thing I would tell them, and this might sound a little harsh, but just remember, nobody owes you anything. Nobody. You're a veteran, and we love you for your service. We really do. However, that does not entitle you to a job or a position. I've seen that a couple times where people walk into circumstances where they feel like the job's just going to get handed to them. And, you know, we do a very good job of praising our veterans while they're serving. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many times when I wore a uniform around the Twin Cities, people would shake my hand or buy lunch for me. And it was incredibly appreciated. But at the same time, too, you still have to earn your position and you still have to tell that story.
Lots of stories to be told. Lots of people out there willing to listen and support. What encouraging message would you send to somebody that's standing out there today thinking about why they can't find the next role, what they should do, and how to motivate them to move forward?
Yeah, that sounds like that question actually, Jason, sounds a lot like what people come up to me with, where they call it imposter syndrome, where they think they have to have rank in order to lead. And I'm here to tell you that that is absolutely not the case. Take a look at what you've done over your career. Take a look at the people you've influenced. You have the power to make that difference and to turn it over into the civilian world.
Aaron, there's so much more to talk about. We're out of time. Welcome you back any time in the future to talk more about this important subject. Thank you for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, gentlemen.
That was Aaron Meyer, General Manager of Transcend Employee Engagement, with us on the Minnesota Military Radio.
Joining me now is Greg Peterson, who is the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the Brown County Veteran Service Officer. Greg, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be here.
Greg, we finally made it to summer. It's July in Minnesota. Imagine there's a lot of veterans out fishing and stuff, and the pandemic is, I hope, mostly behind us.
I do, too. Yeah, there are veterans out doing a lot of things, motorcycling, fishing, driving their Corvettes around, going to concerts. Of course, that's what we do during the summertime here in Minnesota.
That's what we do, but I'm wondering now that a lot of people have received the vaccine and they're able to get out and about, are they coming in for appointments?
Oh, yeah. We're very busy here. I've been very busy yesterday and today. We're constantly having Vietnam vets come for the very first time and tell us, hey, I've got this cancer and I heard that, and we jump on that claim, and the VA's real fast now at those. We're getting them done probably in 6 weeks, benefits in the hands of the veterans.
Well, the Vietnam veterans, a lot of them are retiring now. They've spent a career working, and they've got some time in their hands, and unfortunately, exposure to Agent Orange is coming home to roost.
Oh, it's terrible.
It is terrible. Greg, I think you wanted to talk today about the Spirit of the American Doughboy statue. For those of our listeners that might not be familiar with the term, can you explain Doughboy?
Yeah, for Doughboy, some people might be thinking about that little guy with the muffins that are made. But our American World War One soldiers, when they got over to England, the Brits nicknamed the soldiers Doughboys because of the life preservers they were wearing when they came off of the ships and all their gear. They looked big and puffy as if their bellies were full of dough, and the name stuck. They were the Doughboys.
And, of course, unfortunately, that World War One was so long ago that there are no Doughboys left with us.
That's right. Yeah, the last one, he was quite old, 109, I think it was, but he died, World War One, 1918 and 19 for us in American involvement since 1914. Yeah, that's a long time ago, over 100 years. And a lot of people don't think much about history earlier than when they were born. So I can imagine a lot of people would not know exactly what a doughboy is.
Yeah, of course, if you study the World War One, it was a terrible, bloody affair and brutal. And those guys fought hard and came home, and now they're no longer with us. But do we have, I know we've got military monuments all over Minnesota. Do we have one to the Doughboys?
We do. We have one Doughboy monument. A Doughboy monument or a statue is a life-sized bronze or maybe copper statue of a World War One soldier who has his rifle in his left hand and a hand grenade in his right hand. and he's then standing on the ground with barbed wire around his feet. And there are about 146 of these nationwide. But there's only one in Minnesota. Do you know where that is?
You're going to tell me.
I am. It's right here where I'm recording from, right here in New Ulm, Minnesota, in our city cemetery, about dead center in the city cemetery, the only bronze doughboy in the state of Minnesota. Our doughboy is actually a reproduction because our first one, unfortunately, was vandalized in 1995, so they had to make a whole new one. There are some in other states you could see as well.
So our message today is if you get down to New Ulm, look at the city cemetery and check out the American Doughboy statue. Greg, I want to thank you for joining us again on Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, you're welcome. Look up the Doughboy on Google and you'll find all the other places that it is.
Very good, sir. That was Greg Peterson, president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the Brown County Veteran Service Officer. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel Nate Asta from the 148th Fighter Wing, Aaron Myers from Transcend Engagement, Greg Peterson from the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, my co-host, Jason Burley, Commissioner Larry Herkey from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we visit the DAV National Headquarters to learn about their efforts to advocate for our veterans. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.